Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's Neil Atkinson with John Gibbons, Rob Gutman and Mike Kearney to predominantly discuss Brentford 3, Liverpool 3. We will touch on Porto as well. Everything to come for you in the next sort of 50 minutes or so around that. Brentford 3, Liverpool 3, John. For me, almost composing my thoughts in the writing of this agenda as much as anything else, one of the areas I ended up was, firstly, this is a missed opportunity for Liverpool. But there's something else that happens in this game that hasn't happened in Liverpool's seasons in 1819 and 1920, which was any moment they could find a way to give the opposition a degree of encouragement. My God, did they oblige. Whether it's through missing their own chances or the flip side of eliciting great saves from goalkeepers or just making a bit of a defensive error or just not doing the right thing, they managed to do everything they could to make Brentford believe they were in the game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There's lots of ways to kill a football game, and we didn't choose any of them. Well, we had a go at some of them, but didn't effectively sort of, you know, go through with it. And obviously the one eventually, you know, the eventually plumped for is it went well score to fourth and win it, and we're not able to do that. But there was other things that we could have done during that game to sort of kill it. You know, if not kill it completely, then at least, you know, quieting everything down for sort of 5-10 minutes. And they chose not to, both in terms of, you know, the guys who are out on the pitch, but also the manager changes maybe he could have made and sort of elected not to. And yeah, it's just a bit of a frustrating one. As you say, we haven't had many games like that in the last sort of couple of years. There's been a couple of signs that maybe, you know, something like this was coming, but nothing sort of quite as drastic. You know, I saw, I think our friend Christian Walsh tweeted saying it reminded me a bit of, you know, the days of Seville, where we sort of 3-0 up and going back to the 3-all. And there was a couple
sort
of
others. Pre-Van Dijk stuff.
Yeah, there's a couple of others he cited, whereas, you know, we haven't done not seen anything quite like that. They normally find a way to work it out, and they didn't sort of on the pitch, and that was the sort of, not necessarily concerning thing for me, but certainly the frustrating one.
The frustrating one there, Mike. Emotions, to me, in hindsight, appear to have played a massive part. Again, watching the game back, you end up feeling like Liverpool are just getting swept along. And I think this team at times embraces chaos quite well, and it's an option for them, but it didn't seem right in this one. They ended up very much playing the occasion as much as the football team, and none of this is to disparage Brentford. We will give credit to them as it wears on. But it felt like Liverpool were playing this team as a concept as much of the reality of what they were facing.
Yeah, and I to be honest, I think that's more down to Brentford than what Liverpool did, really. I mean, how many times have we seen a Liverpool even go behind and go and then grab the game and control it and put chances to bed, and you know, we'll get on to talk about the goals specifically later, I suppose, but the nature of their second and third is just not what we've seen from Liverpool for a long while now. You know, you mentioned their pre-Van Dijk stuff before, and it was sort of a glimpse back into that, but I couldn't put my finger on why it was happening. Was it because we weren't playing well, or was it because Brentford were playing well? And it's probably somewhere in the middle, a bit of both. But even just watching it, wanting them to just grab it by the scruff of the neck when we go 2-1 up, and then again when we go 3-2 up, you just think, you're expecting this moment of right now, we'll just calm this now and we'll see this through. And it never really comes, to be honest. And even when they equalise, I didn't think we'd then go and win it. The one to make it 3-all, I just thought that was us now. We'd probably settle for the points. Not settle for it, but I thought that was the point done there, and it was massively disappointing. As much as I will give credit to Brentford, and I really like the way they play, you know, they adapted to play against us a certain way. You could see that happening all first half, where they're probably, you know, they're the better team in spells, aren't they? To be fair, yeah, to Brentford, it's not, it's you know, it could end up turning out to be a better point than what we think it is. But ultimately, you said it's an opportunity dropped.
It is a missed opportunity, Rob, and that's part of why it doubly hurts. United have been sloppy earlier in the day, frankly, and being the team we've been waiting for them to be in the league so far this season, they demonstrate all of the weaknesses, frankly, and their recriminations and inquiries go on today. We are in a situation where Manchester City and Chelsea played one another, and you know, City looked much the better team. Chelsea looked, frankly, a little bit cowardly across the course of that game. If ever it felt like there was a moment for Liverpool to put the hammer down with City on the horizon next week, this is another reason, I think, why the game felt the way in which it did as we experienced it. I do wonder if there was a little element of that with the players as well, as part of what they're getting swept up in, is the opportunity that's in front of them as much as the game against Brentford. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, and I feel any conclusions I can reach could be wrong, and that was going to be my caveat, because so many statements can be true at once. Like, sometimes games like that just happen. Klopp, I thought in his post-match, was interesting. He was very keen to say Brentford fully deserved their point, and yet, in the next breath, demonstrate how they didn't, actually, if you think about it, because Liverpool created more than enough chances to have won that game. It's really hard to make sense of. We're going to go through the nuts and bolts of this, and then the errors, and there's so much you think Liverpool that didn't need to happen. But at the end of the day, there are games like that which turn into, I thought there was a point, oh, this could turn into a crazy 5-2 or something like that.
I genuinely
thought that was, you know, at that moment, if you freeze frame as Salah's moving on to that ball, which he should finish for 4-2, at that moment you freeze frame, this is going to finish 5-2, if you ask me to absolutely bet on it. But you're right, but the context creates the sense of panic, and that's what what we say doesn't matter in the wider scheme of things. But I wouldn't like anybody to come out of this. We talked in the Friday show about how City weren't panicked after their 0-0 with Southampton, and nor should we be after the 3-3. After I calmed down about it the day after, I was more focusing my own mind, and not just gratuitously, on the positives of the goals that were getting scored. And I enjoyed the goals that were getting scored. I enjoyed that Salah notched another goal. I think it's important that he keeps scoring for Liverpool and for his season. I thought the fact that Curtis Jones scores, albeit deflected, it's still a good goal.
Yeah, he really strikes it well.
I thought that was, I said coming into the game, didn't I thought it was a big day for Curtis. I thought he'd get picked. I want to see him have a big push-on performance, and I think we get that. So, to me, without kidding ourselves, I think let's take more positives than negatives, despite the fact that the disappointment is present there.
But it's just on that, though, Rob, to come back to, I don't know, you don't know, but the title race aspect of it is that arguably, for the first time since Leicester away in 2019, the first time since then, Liverpool had a bit of title pressure. I think that this is, I think this is worth acknowledging and worth flagging, that there was a bit of, other than the game-by-game stuff, and it is worth remembering this is a team that pulls together, the run it pulls together at the end of last season to qualify for the Champions League.
Yeah.
But that was proper title pressure, I think. And I do wonder if that does play a little bit of a part in Liverpool's performance there, in Liverpool's mindset and outlook. It is the first time they've been under that pressure since December 2019. And it's, it is a lot of pressure to be under all of a sudden.
It's very hard to know. Is that pressure? In old money, it's not pressure. And I think the likes of Bob Paisley, we're going back, or any Liverpool manager of yesteryear would have gone, no league title is won on game 6 or 7 or whatever it is. So to talk about title pressure at this stage, they would say, is absurd. We don't think like that. We don't feel like that, because we've experienced those two near 100-point seasons where pressure was game one, and we maintained accepting that and working with it for that period of time. I think there's enough, the quality has returned to the top of the division, the Premier League. There's the United, despite their results, are going to be no mugs this season, nor Chelsea City, obviously. And there's even signs that an Arsenal could re-enter the fray. Who knows? And West Ham already showing the same sort of form. So what I'm trying to say in a long-winded way is I think points are going to get taken off teams by each other. I don't think this is going to be a 97-point-plus title-winning season for anyone. If you ask me to bet, as I was going to bet on my 5-2, say, my hypothetical 5-2, I would bet the league has won this season with about 88 points. That's what I'm genuinely going to pitch at now, and maybe look stupid on, I don't know. But within that context, a draw now doesn't matter. It's what you do next, and being calm is the key thing.
I think that's all fair. I think, the idea of what we don't know, sort of, what a big point it is or what a big drop to it is, yes, it is fair. I think what it does feel like it does is it makes the City game bigger next week, and I think that's almost undeniable, really, that this City game, you know, because of their result and because of ours, you know, is a big one. And I think, you know, I think a draw is largely fine. I think obviously you'd love to win it, and it'll be great, you know, for lots and lots of reasons, you know, if they do beat City, but obviously they could lose that game. You know, City have got a big week themselves. You know, they've got to go to PSG now as well. So, you know, we'll see, you know, how they are, you know, by the sort of, you know, the time they walk up to Anfield, and I'm sure Anfield, you know, will be brilliant on the day. But I remember when Peter Carney came in, and we would, one of the shows was doing with Peter, and he was reflecting on two seasons ago, the season they won it, and what a big goal that was at Aston Villa. So Mane's at Villa, and he said there was a moment in that Villa game where City were coming next week, and they could have, how the results were going, they could have gone above us if they'd have beat us. He said there was a moment, and I was thinking about that, you know, after the Brentford thing, whereas now, you know, City are looking at that and thinking, we beat them at Anfield next week, and we go above them, and you know, we meant to have had this, you know, rubbish start, you know what I mean? And it could have been, there's almost a huge swing, isn't there, in the case of, you know, going into the weekend, you know, that they were, you know, I really liked your thing with David Mooney in the Friday show. I thought he was excellent, but he said, you know, we could win all three games here, or we could lose all three of them, and they both sort of feel equally possible. Well, they can't now lose all three, but you know, they still could potentially sort of win all three, really. And I don't know, I think what happens against City sort of, you know, is much bigger now and feels much bigger now, because as I say, if they can get through this week above Liverpool in the table, like, they might not look back.
That's what I think, and that's my concern, is that they might not look back.
Yeah.
And we've got so I take Bob Paisley. I mean, he did a lot of good in the game from our point of view. but one of my things is, and I know where you're coming from with the 88 point thing, and I think that, you know, in the long run, you might be proven right. But one of my things is I don't know if you necessarily need to get 100 points, but there will be a point in December where you need to look like you can.
You need to run. You have to have a big run in you.
And that's my
10 games.
Yeah, that's my concern. In terms of going back to this game specifically, Mike, none of the back six play well. By the back six, I mean the goalkeeper, the four in front, and then Fabinho. It's worth saying they have all been playing very well, with the possible exception of Robertson, who seemed just a teeny little bit in and out, not least because he's been in and out in terms of his selection as much as anything else. But they go from looking like they're playing very, very well indeed to, from about 20 minutes onwards against Brentford, it's not entirely clear where the line's meant to be. It's not entirely clear who's doing what. It's not entirely clear what every single, you know, is anyone trying to get in front of Tony? Is that something that Fabinho's been tasked with or not? Liverpool, they just look a bit of a mess. I think credit to Tony and Mbeumo. Mbeumo's movement was absolutely brilliant. So credit to them. But Liverpool should be doing better.
No, I think you're right with giving the credit to the Brentford forwards there. I mean, I've not really seen Joel Matip struggle as much as he did against Tony. You know, he's very, very, very good at doing what he was doing. You know, he only needed 2 or 3 yards of space, and that was it. The ball was his then. So he was very good at making them runs and claiming the ball, whether it was, you know, bringing it down or flicking it on for the movements of Mbeumo. You know, there's sort of context around some of the goals that we concede. They're very scrappy, and like, it's a scramble, and we're disappointed to concede them. We rightly should be. I think they won't need telling twice, any of them lads, by any of the video staff or Klopp, that there was mistakes made. But also, I watched the game back, watched the highlights back, and I was thinking how close is Trent to clearing that one off the line last minute. And he's left on his own, basically, against three of them at the back stick.
Yeah.
You know, people are losing. People's, you know, they're not following the runners, or they've just, I don't know whether to say it's our fault or they've played really well. And it's probably somewhere in the middle, but because we're Liverpool-centric, we want to sometimes say, we shouldn't have let that happen. But maybe Tony was just too good on the day, and maybe they go on to win it if we don't have, you know, Van Dijk's not having his best game there, but at the very end, you know, Tony's in, and he absolutely can't get anywhere near Virgil van Dijk, because Van Dijk knows in that moment this has to not go anywhere, and he's you know, that's the only moment I think where he's like, you can put your hat on and say that's a Liverpool, you know, that's a centre half that we know, and excellent defender, and to keep us in the game at that point, because it there would have been no coming back from that if they go and make a 4-3, and we would have been talking about 3 drop points today, and we're not. So I mean, there's definite problems there, but I've got full faith that they will fix it between them as a unit. I mean, who are you bombing out? You don't really want to bomb anyone out there, really, do you, in terms of going forward for the majority of the rest of the season? You know,
he's not going to bomb anyone.
No, he's not.
We know that. The thing I would say, John, is all three goals come from inside the 6-yard box. That's not great. And it's not what we've seen from this Liverpool side. I can't remember even the last time a team other than from set pieces, say, got three attempts inside our 6 yard box. It might even be the City, the 4-1 in when football was crap, yeah. To be honest with you. It's been a long, long time since you've seen that, and you've not seen it very often at all. But all three goals come from inside the 6 yard box.
Yeah, they do. And we're not great at various points that we're leaving pressure, I think. There's a few moments, and not just in the goals. I didn't understand why Alisson was punching so much. It didn't feel particularly necessary, and not particularly punching that well. So he wasn't sort of getting great distance. And I think that was, you know, allowing the ball to sort of come back in a lot. I think, you know, there's one time where Van Dijk just heads it straight up in the air, you know, from a corner. And then there was one break in the first half where we missed two tackles, which is so unlike Liverpool. There's Curtis Jones. And to be fair, I think Kurt just tries to nick it, and that can go either way. But then Andy Robertson comes in straight after and misses out on a 50-50, which is, you know, you just don't see. You know, he normally sort of takes everything. And there was just a few times really where you're like, we're not allowing ourselves, we're not clearing our lines here. We're struggling to sort of, you know, just you sort of get rid, and it wasn't like they weren't trying to, they were just sort of failing to do it really. So it's not like, oh well, Liverpool aren't a team who do that, they were having a go, just doing it very badly. And so that was the frustrating thing for me really, that we were never able to just clear our lines, just get ourselves out, just sort of clear our heads. And then so in those moments where the pressure was coming, it just sort of kept coming really. And I think the other thing that frustrated me is that we weren't, you know, able to sort of problem solve, you know, on the pitch ourselves. And we were doing things that we would normally do, but you know, they were doing things that were quite sort of extraordinary in terms of, you know, or unusual, you know, rather than extraordinary. You know, as Mike says, this you know, really real overloads. You know, we've seen overloads at the back post, but this was ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? It was, you know, there was 3-4 lads and Trent on his own, like, you know, and what is he meant to do? I found it sort of the criticism of Trent in terms of for the goals sort of mind-boggling, really. It's like, you know, I'm not saying he had the best game in the world, but in those instances, like as Mike says, he has 3 headers to win and then he still nearly clears it off the line. You know, that's why really, I think, you know, we're going to talk about the subs, I think, but I think on reflection, you'd really like some James Milner in this game, because Milner, his greatest skill is knowing where to stand. He's really, really good at it. He just goes, he knows where he needs to be on a football pitch. And he'd have been helping them fullbacks, he'd have been there, because he'd just recognised, I need to go and stand there for a while and sort this out. And so that's what frustrated me really. And I think on reflection, you know, I understand the formation change, I understand what he was trying to do, but I think he probably looked back and go, I wish I had a bit of Milner on there.
Yeah, it's the first time in a long time we've seen Liverpool bullied in the air. You know, okay, even without Van Dijk and Matip and Gomez last season, we weren't really bullied in the air, because Nat Phillips, actually, that was his superpower, as we discovered, being really, really good in the air. But they'd worked it out. They'd worked out, as you said, the overloads on the back post puts you up against a fullback. It's a very easy tactic. Why we didn't work that out, I don't know. I also thought we should have worked out early on that they were using Tony on Matip the way What's-His-Face used to sit on Lovren. Mm. From Watford, what's his name?
Deeney,
yeah. And I think there was a case of swapping sides. Van Dijk, Matip is a big, big man. I don't think he's naturally a genius in the air. Van Dijk is both a big man and fantastic in the air. And I think there might have been a case of swapping, because Tony was winning everything. And so they were able to assume that they could make a run off him every time. And I think
they gambled really well, I thought.
They did, but they could afford to because of his reliability. And I think it spread fear. I think the goalie had a very quietly shaky game. I don't know if he's even quietly shaky game in my estimation. You can't say he's terribly at fault on the last two goals, but he's not great. For the first time, you take for granted that Alisson makes himself big. He makes himself small from both goals.
He certainly doesn't bail us out, Robin, the way their goalkeeper did.
No, that just wasn't him. That's very 6 out of 10 attempts, really, whereas you expect a minimum of 8 out of 10 presence from him, if that's a measure.
This is my point on encouragement, to be honest with you, Rob. I think what we've been really good at across, again, from 2018 to 2020, and then there's the oddness of last season at times, but even in the running, is all the things that you want to believe will work against Liverpool, they might work once, they might work twice, but slowly but surely they'll stop working. At which point then you don't make the gambling run, because why would you make the gambling run? It pulls you out of position and you're left to sort of then have to pick up the pieces, and it's not worked and it keeps not working. I think that the flip side happens here for Brentford. Yeah. I think Brentford actually look pretty wobbly first 10. Yeah. Liverpool should get themselves ahead, and then they end up with Matip having to clear one off the line. And then they manage to sort of to force themselves back on their game again, but then the goalkeeper makes a terrific save. The crowd's back up. Brentford feel like they can get something. And then over and over, the tactics that they're trying to employ are working at least sort of 70%. So that's all feeling good. And I think that this is, you know, John there mentions Milner. I think just in general, what this team's been excellent at doing is just leaving you feeling a bit bereft. And they had loads of opportunity, I think, to do that, both with the scoreboard, but also with the way in which they were playing. And every single time it felt to me as though, no, they did the opposite. They made Brentford feel like they were really live runners and riders within the game.
Yeah, they did it. Every small win or big, medium-sized win that Brentford wanted, they were getting.
Yeah.
You know, there was no surprises, really. Watch out for Tony. He's good. You know, cut the supply lines off to Tony. Have a plan for Tony, you know, without being overly paranoid about it while still taking the game to Brentford. Didn't really do that. You know, quieten that crowd. Don't give them the encouragement. Because in a way, I wondered a little bit. Liverpool haven't been, people say Elland Road wasn't really, in a febrile atmosphere in a ground. That I mean, I wasn't in the ground, but you could put on the telly, it sounded bloody loud. So you imagine it was. We gave them encouragement. It felt cup tie-ish. It felt like, yeah. I don't care, you're in a small ground and they played like a team with nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And you don't normally see that in the Premier League.
Because they started the season so well, it was like, well, let's just see what happens.
Yeah, free hit time. Like, yeah. Liverpool beat us 5-1, who cares? Yeah. You know, they really didn't mind. I you got that impression.
It was a terrible advert for taking Premier League games abroad, by the way. This leak that's come out this morning that David Ornstein's tweeted, I was just laughing, saying, imagine that Brentford-Liverpool game in Qatar. It'd have been rubbish.
Oh, Jesus Christ, can you imagine? I'm going to keep coming back to the context for me, in that I was encouraged that we did keep, you know, the comparison to the Villa game where Liverpool, they come again and they come again and they managed to get a win when they seemingly were beaten. I think Liverpool looked like they'd messed up the points quite a lot in that game and did manage to come again and come again. I don't know, maybe the true context is, does Salah bag when he should do for that second one? We're saying that was an example of how Liverpool come and come again. Because remember, we're behind in that bear pit. We're behind. And I'm thinking, shit, we may need just to get to half time here, clear our heads, come up with a new plan. But we get back in it. And we find a way of taking the lead.
But then the flip side of that is, and it's a great save, don't get me wrong, but the save from Jota. The save from Jota makes them feel, because it's just gone 1-1. And again, this is what my point about the encouragement thing. It's just gone 1-1. And I'm thinking, if we make it 2 here, we probably go in half-time 3-1, to be honest, because they've gone. And they were like, because the emotions went everywhere. They were playing on both sides. There were ups and downs for everyone, Rob. The save from Jota is, it's one of the best saves I've seen from an opposition keeper, at the very least, in years. It's genuinely tremendous.
It is. Their goalie has an insane game on everything to do with the art of goalkeeping. An insane game. But it is an example, though. Us not scoring there, that Jota chance not getting put away just before half time, can be a blow. You know, and we didn't. We took it in our stride. We set about taking them apart in the second half. We do well. We get 2-1 up. And I think whilst we're readying ourselves, we needed to have a better 5 or 10, and we don't, and they get back into it. But to then come again, and at 3-2, we are ready to then go 4 and 5. It's just that we make these schoolboy tactical errors.
Okay, everything that you need around Liverpool supporting on the Anfield Wrap, pre-match and post-match. Obviously, Porto's coming up and Manchester City as well. And lots of us enjoying ourselves within the gaps too. So if you've been thinking about subscribing, now would be a really, really good time at theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe for that, for audio or video or both. And you can download the Anfield Wrap app and you get some free tokens in amongst there. If you do that, to listen to some of the premium content, you can get that from Google Play or Apple Pay or Apple Store. I don't know what the stores are called. I don't know.
App Store or something.
Just, you know, you've got apps. You know, you press the buttons, they come up on the screens, and then you press install. Do that with the Anfield Wrap and go from there. Everything that you need there on Tour Player. And very, very quickly as well, John, we're doing a live recorded podcast for the first time. I know we do live shows, but this isn't that. It's a live recorded podcast, or two podcasts, for the first time, and the Monday and the international break.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's Monday the 11th. We're doing a What Football Means to Me, which is one of our really popular shows that Adam Smith hosts. And then we're doing an AFQ Football where the questions will come from the audience. So it's in Leith on Monday the 11th, 7 p.m. doors. It won't be a late one, I promise. I know it's a school night, but we should really enjoy it. Our beer's going to be on sale there as well, which is quite cool. So you can come and try one of our beers if you like as well. But yeah, if you go to theanfieldwrap.com/TAW live, you can get tickets for that. They're also available on Eventim. So if you go into Eventim and search for the Anfield Wrap, you can find us there and come along. It should be really good fun.
Okay. The chances that we have, Rob, and the chances to find chances, scoring three away from home, it should be enough. But I can understand, and we'll come on to talk about the sub in a minute, I can understand wanting to get too clear. The double chance is there. Let's be crystal clear. Salah doesn't miss it by much. The way he misses it is the sort of thing that winds people up, if you know what I mean. Like, if he drives it low towards the corner and it goes as far wide as it did over the bar, people are probably less cross, if you know what I mean. And this is just part of our irrationality as football supporters around this. Apart from that, I thought Salah played ever so well, not for the first time this season. I thought he was absolutely terrific and obviously gets his goal. It's unfortunate not to have another one where it just gets cleared off the line at the end there. It's good cover and defending from the Brentford player on that occasion. It's a shame Liverpool didn't score the goals that I would say their play generally deserved, because if they had, they would have scored five.
Yeah, I mean, blaming Salah for that miss is ridiculous. I mean, he knows he's actually up against, I think, a really good goalkeeper who is having a really good day, and therefore he's got to do something quite clever. It's millimetres in that, isn't it, really? It's an intelligent, classy attempt at a finish, and occasionally they're going to go wrong. What's heartbreaking? It was a heartbreaking miss on many levels. One, we would have won the game with something to spare had that gone in, but it was a great move, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It showed that the team was...
It's a great ball from Mane. Mane's had a bit of criticism after that game. That's a lovely ball into Salah for that one.
Yeah, I think he did fine. As I said earlier, I'm pleased with the scorers. You go into games, you go, well, you can't take for granted scoring ever, but you think, if we're going to score today, I really wanted Jota to get a goal. Because he scores twice early on, maybe two, three, four games he hasn't scored for us. And a little niggly criticisms of him, is he in games enough? Thought he had a good game, actually. Thought he was a threat to them. Got his goal, very unlucky not to get two goals. So I'm really pleased with that. Pleased that Salah is continuing to bag at this one goal a game rate and is becoming Messi as Messi fades from being Messi. And outstanding, I'll say it again, Curtis Jones. I think he can be such a massive player for Liverpool. I think there's still big questions as to how we're going to use him best, but I think he's such a talent at 20. He already looks an important Premier League player to me.
Jones played really well, Mike. I understood taking him off, get onto the tactical aspect in a minute, but I understood taking him off, not least because I suspect he's got a part to play against Porto as well, either from the bench or from the outset. And he may well have played himself into contention with City, even if Keita manages to get himself back fit. You wouldn't be at all surprised or disappointed if Liverpool's midfield three against Manchester City was Fabinho, Henderson and Jones, and that's testament to how well he played.
No, I think he's got the share, to be honest. We've watched him, haven't we, really slowly blossom into a player that now is really trusted by Klopp. And it seems mad to say, because Elliot has the shirt at the start of the season and everyone's talking about, where's Jones, what's wrong with Jones, but now, you know, it's now he's in again and everyone can, oh yeah, he was good, wasn't he? And I sort of feel a bit harsh on saying he slowly blossoms into it, because, you know, he hasn't like burst onto the scene, but he also hasn't like dawdled onto it. He's just took his chances when he's got them. He's been really well. He's listened to everything. He's being coached on the training fields. You know, he's obviously got the trust of all of his teammates, like a lot of the youngsters do at Liverpool, because they've been training with the first team for a long while. He's just a fair. Klopp was saying last season, it's really unfortunate for Curtis, because he's now considered a senior player and not a youngster, which he still was in terms of, you know, first team experience, but. I'm really comfortable with him in the team. I'm really comfortable with a lot of players. I was getting more and more comfortable with Harvey Elliott making his claim. But Curtis Jones, you know, he's had a couple of seasons now where he's been in and around, getting involved, and now he's starting. I wouldn't bat an eyelid if he starts next week against Man City. I wouldn't be batting an eyelid and being worried about him, because, you know, he's willing to do it all off the ball as well as he does when he's on it. So if he starts, I actually think, as I said, he's got the shirt, and I think that will be the midfield three, all being well for Man City. I'm maybe a bit unfortunate that he comes off when he does, but I also sort of do get why he does it. It's just the after bits as John mentioned before, like it feels like we could be doing something else. We could have been a bit more maybe reactive off that. Well, now we're 3-2 up now. I was making that change around. I'll still make it, but maybe do something else while we're still at 3-2. But we do go on to have our best part of the game as well, which is weird to say in that change. So maybe that's what we were thinking about doing, but then okay, we'll be playing well, so we'll keep it as it is. And you know, it's not, you know, you're not a part of he goes off, doesn't he, after putting us in the lead. But you can never point at him saying he's not putting it in for us. He always does and he always will.
I think he's trying to do two things with the sub, which is why he doesn't change a 3-2. So I think it's in theory an attacking sub, because it's a forward for a midfielder, and it's getting an extra forward on the pitch. And he did say after the game, you know, we wanted to cause them more problems effectively, which he do. But I think he also wants to get someone alongside Fabinho and sort of shore it up there. So I think the move to 4-2-3-1, I think he felt would help us offensively and going back as well. Now that sort of element of it doesn't really happen, which is maybe a bit frustrating, you know, for the manager. But I think that's why he doesn't change it, because normally, you know, if you make an attack on somebody, then you go 3-2, you'd at least have a bit of a think to be a few minutes, wouldn't he? He doesn't even kick it again, does he? He's off by the time they sort of kick off, yeah. which he obviously has a good chuckle about. But I think that's why he's sort of stuck with it, because I think the sub was as much about getting Henderson a little bit deeper early and having play alongside Fabinho, just so they could be conscious of these balls into the box and what was sort of going on behind them. As I say, I didn't see sort of, you know, great evidence that switch sort of maybe, you know, worked as well as what maybe the manager wanted it to. Obviously, Firmino coming on, you know, we created sort of a lot of chances, and Bobby was there sitting to win it, wasn't he, at the end? So if it wasn't for that really good interception from the Brentford defender, then, you know, it could be a lad coming off the bench, yeah, and winning the game for Liverpool. You know, it was sort of that close, but it was all fine margins. You know, there's so many moments in this game.
There's 15 between the goals, between 3-1 and 3-2. Between 3-2 and 3-3. So we make it 3-2, yeah, and there is still 50, so he does the sub then.
Yeah.
There's 15 minutes. I know, I take your point, and I think that I'm surprised that in those conditions, not least for a variety of reasons, in those conditions, Liverpool playing Saturday at R5, the game being the way in which it is with that level of intensity, and maybe that's part of it from the manager's point of view, that he feels as though it's a difficult game for someone to come on and get the speed off, possibly. Yeah. But he's then, you know, there's 15 minutes between the two goals. He does nothing else.
Yeah.
And I'd expect at least sort of, you know, six of those lads who got the full 90 there will be playing again against Porto. So he's got a number of reasons to change again. And he doesn't. And I think he probably doesn't, as I say, because he feels it's going well, the stuff on the chances. And I understand. That's why, you know, at times as a manager, you can't do right for doing wrong. He might make a sub and then concede, and then we'd all be going, oh,
why has he done that? Yeah. No, it's a fair point. You know, we could have done the 4-2-3-1 for 5-10 minutes and had a little look at it, and then maybe done Milner for Jota and just stuck Bobby up front. I think, you know, on reflection, you know, he maybe might think I wish he'd have done that, because as I say, Milner's...
There's arguments because he's done that with the players on the pitch, so he doesn't necessarily need to make the change. I know it would have been a bit like, oh, we've got the goal now, he could have pushed Jones out to one of the, because Jones has played in the front three, hasn't he, in the past, and he could do a job sort of in a different place in the 4-2-3-1, see how that works before he then makes it. But I mean, it's all hindsight we're talking in, which is what Klopp doesn't get to do, does he, on the pitch and at the game? Like,
I wonder if the Jones sub wasn't preordained before kickoff. He's not necessarily Firmino swap, but that he was going to come off on two thirds on 65 minutes, because if you think about the timing of it, it's that kind of sub, isn't it? It was going to happen the minute before. It's almost like those pre-season kind of subs. And I think Jones starts against Norwich, and, you know, we've talked about, he's going to be needed to start either against Porto or against City. I think he was managing his minutes. He's 20 still.
But as I say, I'm fine with that sub, and I'm fine with the tactical shift. It's then that nothing else happens for 15 minutes. And even nothing else happens from 82 to the end of the match. He doesn't do anything. It's not the subs. We're not talking about the subs here, other than as a negative capability, Rob. You know, even after it goes 3-3, he doesn't change it again. Now, as I say, I feel as though he'll feel it was a mad game to possibly bring someone on into, you know, that there was a lot going on. But I am mildly surprised, to be quite honest with you. You know, Liverpool draw a game against a side they're expected to beat. It's 3-3. They've got a Champions League game on Tuesday. If you'd have said to me before the match, all of this is the situation, roll the dice and tell me how many subs he uses, I wouldn't have said just one. I'd have presumed all three are getting used at some point.
He quietly doesn't like subs, though, does he? For a man who's campaigned for more.
Yeah. No,
yeah. It's true.
He does quietly like that. This is, and again, you know, and he gets a lot right. And the point about this is that, you know, it's always the strengths and weaknesses weaknesses and where they're interrelated question.
Yeah.
But, you know, like he backs the boys, and backing the boys is normally really, really good. And he backs the system, and backing the system is normally really, really good. But I can sit here right now and say on 76, I wish he brought Joe Gomez on for Trent. And just said, this is the way we play now. You know, on 70, and then he does that, and then on 82, because nothing's happened ideally by that point, because I'm right in this alternative universe.
Cancelled that goal.
Yeah, and then, you know, on 82, we then move along, and then he does Milner for Jota, or Milner for Mane, or, you know, he does Milner for someone. And then from there, because part of the reason why he doesn't change it again is he sort of feels like, well, I've got my goal scorers on the pitch, the 3-3. These are the lads who are going to score me a goal. They're all on the pitch at 3-3. So I'm not going to do anything else. So all of it makes sense. None of it is, this is ridiculous. But I think that, you know, people are within the rights to occasionally, and he'd say so himself, and he'd laugh when he said it. You know, you are within your rights to sort of wonder whether or not he called that one correctly. And as I say, that's without even discussing Jones off Firmino on. There's a quarter of a football match to do anything else, and he does nothing else.
Yeah, I think the manager might say to himself he showed some overconfidence in that football match. I think he thought we would always outshoot them and that we would keep on scoring and scoring in that game. And he was nearly vindicated, because I didn't feel like that. I felt nervous in the game. And when we went 3-2 and you see Jones coming off, my first thought was, like I think most people's, it'd be Milner. It's got to be Milner. And surely now we take all the heat out of this game. I was quite, when it was for me to come in, I was like, oh, okay, fair enough. I thought that's ballsy. And I could see what he was trying to do. I thought what he thought he'd do as well there was use the three behind the striker to be the first line of defence.
Yeah.
So I agree with what you said, John, the idea that he'd play a double six. Of course, that would shore things up. But I also thought the Mane, Jota, Firmino axis would form a screen in front of them primarily, but that could also spring forward and aid Salah. But it was ballsy, and I think he just had a confidence we could keep scoring.
I think there's something else that's happening in the game. Go John first and then Mike, which is after 70 to 80, the thing I'm seeing on the pitch is Brentford look shattered.
Yeah.
They looked absolutely cooked in a way that, you know, a way that they've just given everything for 70 minutes against Liverpool. And the thing, I think it's an old line from, I think it might be a Ragnick line, that players are able to find more energy to run forward than run backwards. And when, again, we give them a little bit of encouragement on about 78 minutes, I think they find a bit more legs. Like, okay, we can have a big breath in and we can have a go at these. I think what the manager's seeing is Brentford are cooked, the finish, they're done. And then all of a sudden, they just sort of find the way. And then when they get the goal, it then gives them the adrenaline boost of we're holding on to this now.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I was watching them 70, 80 and thinking they're gone here. And that's what frustrates me even more about the goal. I was like, you've given them a bit of a soft one there that they haven't particularly, you know,
they hadn't deserved it from 3-2 to 3-3, yeah, Brentford. They deserve overall all the praise in the world, but they hadn't deserved it 3-2 to 3-3.
Yeah, and it's not like they were banging on the door or anything, or you know, throwing pressure at us. As you say, Neil, they looked done in and they just sort of try something down the right hand side and then throw a few men in and get the sort of break from it, really. And that's what I was, you know, really cross when that sort of third one goes in, really, because you know, it's just like, you know, I felt like that's the one we'd gifted them, really, and they weren't in the game at all. And then, like you say, Neil, you know, then they get the adrenaline from having equalised and they know exactly what they need to do, which is see the game out, but then have, you know, a little sort of spurt up front themselves because they were trying to win it too. But I think they all got energy, you know, from that goal where it, you know, and then suddenly, well, it's only 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Including stoppages, really. And so we can do that. Do you know what I mean? We can do the last 10, whereas I think on 75, you know, they must have, you know, been thinking, God, there's hours left in this game. How on earth are we going to see, you know, see it? I was even a 3-2.
I think that's ultimately why it's the most disappointing part of the game for more than just a drop in the 2 points, is because we knew, you know, this Liverpool team don't do that. Like, not anymore anyway, at least. And to see it again is probably why, you know, it has probably triggered some bad memories of Liverpool teams. And there's a lot of chat about, oh, is this the end of this Liverpool side's, you know, domination around the top of the league and stuff like that. I don't think it is, but I can sort of get why people would be triggered to having them conversations, because to not have seen that out, to not have either made a 4-2, and if you're not going to, you know, 4-2 doesn't happen, just not to be good enough to not let that happen. That's what, I mean, I don't know if I'm doing Brentford down again by saying that we let it happen, but it's sort of, that's how I felt while I was watching the game. What have you done that for? Because this was all avoidable. You know, the encouragement thing is the huge part, and we never quite shut the door on them, and it was always open. And even when it was just one goal between us, we've seen, I've seen the play play similar, really, not even miles better, and shut one nils out or shut one goal differences out. That's why it's massively... I just couldn't get away from 2 points dropped on the Saturday night. It was a bit better and more realistic about it, you know, as the days have gone on Sunday and today, but that's why I even at the end of the season, I'll probably still look back and go, that was 2 points that we could have, you know, we left on the table there.
I think we're unlucky in the sense that we play Brentford at exactly the wrong time. And there should never be a wrong time for Liverpool to not be confident about playing Brentford. And I think
there could be a point in the season, for instance, where Elland Road is a lot harder place to go than it is now. And we went to Elland Road when we've got to the start of this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It can't. I think fixtures do play a part. Sometimes you can have a nice one, but sometimes it does shake itself out over the course of a campaign. Like, I'm desperate to fucking play Newcastle. Why can't we play Newcastle?
Next week.
You know what I mean? That'd be perfect. But you get me point, Rob. I think you are right. This was the game that Brentford wanted in the way in which they wanted it. Like John said before, it felt like a free hit. They didn't have to worry about things going the other way. They don't have to worry that if the results go the wrong way for us here, we could be in the relegation places or anything like that.
Yeah, I remember a few seasons ago, United go to David Wagner's Huddersfield and get beaten early on in the season, on about game five or six. I remember Steve Armstrong going, they're the best side we've come up against in a long while. They were relegated that season. Now, if somebody said to me now, Brentford are going to get relegated, I go, that wouldn't surprise me from here on in. Don't think they will, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were. So what is frustrating about this, is, I think, is the talk that it may come to be seen as a good point, as I don't think it will be. I think our rivals will all probably tonk Brentford when they run out of
steam. And they'll also have the video of what Brentford did to Liverpool.
Yeah.
They can all watch the video of what Brentford did to Liverpool and go, okay, this is how we make sure this doesn't happen.
I don't necessarily think it'd be a good, like, we won't talk as a good point. I just think people might say, well, it's better than what we give it credit for. If they do go on to do exactly what they did to us, you know, against City and Chelsea. I think
they played really well. Yeah. And they were up for it, and they were genuinely tough opponents. I don't think on that day, at that moment in time, they were a real handful. If they were a European team, you'd go.
A lot of Premier League teams could do a lot worse than Ivan Toney. Like, he's genuinely a really good centre forward, and there's not loads of them about. I know he scored all his goals in the Championship. He's got one this season, but just thought his all round play yesterday. A lot of Premier League teams could do a lot worse than him.
I'd have him in the squad in a heartbeat.
Yeah, Rob's signing people already.
I think Gutter Never Sleep. Award-winning Gutter, for those who don't subscribe.
Back in January, everyone. Subscribe now to avoid disappointment.
I'm waiting that long.
But what was I going to say? It's two dropped, and I take your point, Rob, on the you know, I agree with you in that I think in a few months' time we won't be going, oh, that was a decent point at Brentford. You know, they've beaten this team. I think that's unlikely, but I think, you know, already everyone's dropped some soft ones, haven't they?
I think
the way we need to look at it is not trying to paint this into anything that it isn't, which is two dropped, but are we still the team who's going to do less of this sort of thing than everyone else? And I think that's what we just need to make sure, really, is that, okay, we're filing this under two dropped that we shouldn't have, but, you know, is there going to be three of these between now and March, or is there going to be six or seven? And that's what we need to sort of make sure.
It's the fact that because of it's the putting the foot down thing that we really missed out on.
Absolutely.
Is what the problem is. Like, we literally could be six clear of City next week if we go and beat them. Had we won yesterday,
could be topless here, mate.
Well, we could be, mate. And Chelsea losing on us doing City, having picked them 2 points up, we're all absolutely rolling down the hill to number 20, aren't we? And we still could, and we probably still will, because we are that good of a team. But I think it's what should have been, not could have been, what should have been.
I don't think this is one of those that should increase our fear that we are again that side that couldn't beat the bottom 13 of last season. I don't think that plays into the evidence of that, because the bottom 13 sides we have played this season, we've really dealt with comprehensively. Norwich twice, Palace.
And the reason why we weren't dealing with those sides was because we weren't creating and scoring enough against them. We've scored another three.
Scoring three away from home, it's just all on the point of should have again. Like, three away from home should win you the game.
We weren't being frustrated by Brentford in an attacking sense. And they did try to. They played very compact. We weren't being frustrated by... We didn't just score three because they're a Cavalier Leeds type of side. They're not.
Okay, Porto then. Porto do well against Atletico Madrid. John, they get a good point there away from home. They actually deserve to win. They might have a look at the expected goals, and Porto was 1.66. Atletico Madrid was less than 0.5 over the course of the game. Didn't see any of the match, but, you know, that's just the raw stats. We were literally playing at the time. City are on the horizon. There's changes to be made. Between the three, you just pick me a team.
Okay.
I've got five names that I think he'll definitely pick.
Okay.
Alisson, Arnold, Fabinho, Salah and Mane. Do you agree with that?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. In that, I'm not saying you're wrong. I think he could do anything.
Do you think this is the game he picks where Mo gets his rest on? Possibly.
Or he might say, well, I'll pick Mo because he's on fire, but I'll pick him with an EG Minamino. He might do that. I think he'll want to rest a few for the City, you know. I mean, we need to remember that the AC Milan team's a bit lively, isn't it? You know what I mean? Obviously, picks a region out of nowhere. Does he sort of throw him in? You know, again, for this, Minamino plays really well. You know, in the League Cup, does he sort of say, okay, you know, give him his go here? I think with City being Tuesday, Sunday, it does sort of allow us, you know, a bit more sort of respite in that regard. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see a bit of a mad team here, which makes Neil's task.
I've only gone for five.
The instruction that you've gone for us.
The Tuesday, Sunday thing might play into the fact that we'd expect a defensive change, wouldn't we, because of, you know, history of injuries and stuff like that. And I didn't expect Matip to get the Milan game, and he does. But maybe the Tuesday, Sunday thing gives us a little bit more chance to give that back four the three in a week where you wouldn't if it was Saturday, Wednesday.
I think Gomez plays. I'll say that. I think Gomez plays. What do you
Who for though? Like
Matip, Van Dijk.
Van Dijk.
I think because of the spread of the game, I think we get Gomez and Van Dijk. I think, do we get Robbo? No, I think we get Tsimikas. Because for me, Firmino coming back is a key benefit here in this particular phase.
There's five subs as well, isn't there, in European games still?
I think Salah gets an hour. I think Salah gets an hour against Porto and starts against City. I think Firmino possibly comes on for him on the hour. He doesn't start yet. I think Jota, Salah and one other, maybe Minamino, maybe Origi, are the three against Porto, with the idea that, so Mane would, I think, will get rested, and then if Mane and Firmino come in totally fresh in terms of they haven't started in midweek to partner Salah. Fabinho, he probably plays all of them, although I think he'd love to be able to get him off against Porto, though he might not be able to. Mm. Henderson gets rested for Porto almost.
Yeah,
certainly.
I think Milner gets him for him.
I think Milner starts. I think Milner starts, and I think the other thing is he does an hour for Fabinho, 30 minutes Henderson with the five subs. That's his compromise off the back of it.
Milner, you've got to be careful giving him the 90, but I think he probably would like to.
I don't think he's starting City, so I think you can give him the 90.
Even if Naby's sort of back in training by Tuesday morning, I don't think he'll start City. So I think, working backwards from that, I think Curtis is going to start City at the moment.
I like him with Milner as well.
So
Curtis to start this one with Milner.
Well, does Curtis then start two? Because then Curtis will have started four straight games. And I know he hasn't had a lot of football, and he probably... And I think you see him taking off. I'm not convinced that Curtis starts Porto. Then maybe he gets half an hour. Maybe Chamberlain finally gets a start. Maybe is it Fabinho, Milner, Chamberlain? Feels like a reprise of a midfield we once enjoyed, I think. I think that's not impossible.
I don't think he'll pick Curtis against City.
Who will he pick, though? Will he pick Naby?
Naby's
50-50 for
me. He might just end up having to. He might go 43-1. He's done that before against City.
Yeah, he did. I hope he doesn't do that.
That's probably if Curtis doesn't, I think that's the most likely, isn't it? The 4-2-3-1.
So you're trying to pick me a City team and a Porto team at the same time, which is fine because that's what the manager's doing. We've got Becker in goal. So your team, your collective team where you've ended up is Alisson in goal, Arnold, Gomez, Van Dijk, Tsimikas, Fabinho, Chamberlain, Milner, Salah, Jota, and one more lad is where you've.
I think you'll go Minamino in that situation if you'll allow me.
Okay,
go on. I'll go with you on
that. I don't think he'll Origi wide ever again.
No, I don't think he'll Origi wide ever again. But he might jot a wide and put Origi through the middle.
Could do.
Either or, Neil.
He can sort that bit out for himself when he's listening to the show back. He can sort that one out.
Yeah, we're just here for the ideas.
I would think my first instinct, it would be Origi, but you'd be very curious to see if Minamino could bag again, because if he does. So he gets one in Porto. That's a handy little bit of form, Minamino's.
Strong bagging.
It's almost a haul.
It is a haul, isn't it? He's on the move. You might even get a minute in the Premier League on the back of that.
Or Watford. Thank you very much indeed to Rob Gutman, whose phone has been red hot, by the way, listeners. It's been stressing me out.
I would swap Rob's phone for a big clock.
No, not indeed. Not for a big clock. He's been an absolute trooper through this. God knows what's been going on. I only hope everything's all right.
It's my normal life, I'm afraid.
So thank you very much to Rob Gutman for staying the course, to Mike Kearney, to John Gibbons, Harry Pryor for producing. It has been the Anfield Wrap this week. Do subscribe if you get the chance. Sports Social Podcast Network.